There is a literary device called parallelism, and that's where you tell a story, but within the story is a foreshadowing of something that's going to come. And probably many of us know that when you tell narratives, sometimes in novels as well as in cinema, they jump around. There are flashbacks to try to build the story. Well, we have a little parallelism and a little flashback going on in the gospel passage. This passage, even though we're in the Easter season, is set the night of the Last Supper. It's part of Jesus' farewell discourse. And what he's doing is he's foreshadowing the fact that after the resurrection, he will leave. He will ascend to the Father. And so he's trying to teach the disciples through foreshadowing with the famous passage, "Remain in my love. Even though I leave, my love will remain in you and yours in me, and our joy will be complete." Now, it sounds very poetic and it sounds very beautiful, but it's often difficult to understand what it means to have love when someone is left. And I must tell you that after decades of scholarly readings, the one lesson from my childhood that has best helped me understand this passage, "Remain in my love," comes from the first grade. Particularly that moment, which probably all of us can remember, there's a moment when we're no longer in our mother's company, when she sets us all off on our own, and there's a fear, is she still with me? I grew up in the, I went to first grade in the late 60s, Northwest Pennsylvania. And then actually first graders walked to school. We walked to school and we probably didn't even lock our doors. And so for the first 5 or 6 days of first grade, my mother walked me both ways. But there came the day when she said, "Timmy, it's time for you to go by yourself." Of course, I knew the way, it was connected to our parish church, but there's that little fear that comes. So, you know, she packed my lunch, put it in my Daniel Boone lunchbox, and got me ready to go. I was shocked. My dad, actually, I didn't know if he knew what I did. He was a hard worker, but dads weren't as involved in the children's lives, so he knew that it was also my first day walking alone. And, you know, being a dad, he looked at the lunchbox and he said, "Why don't we sing the Daniel Boone song, Tim?" And so we did. Daniel Boone was a man, was a big man, with a lion as an eagle and as tall as a mountain was he. And my dad says, "Now you feel ready to go to school, Tim?" Patted me on the back and went out the door. I must say, after that little ritual, I looked at that piece of tin and I thought, I didn't have the words at the time, no jingle written by a studio in Burbank is going to take away this fear of walking to school alone. So my mother kissed me and she hugged me and she said, "Timmy, you're going to be fine." And I walked out the door. But I remember as I was walking down the street with that sickening feeling in your stomach and I'm on the verge of tears, I looked back at the house. And there in the stairway window, I see the curtain drop. And I said, "Oh my God, she's watching me. She's more scared than I am." And that emboldened me with a sense of confidence that got me, I guess, all the way to where I am today. Now, why do I share that story? Because it's really the only concrete image I have of what it means to remain in love. That love remained in each of us despite the pain, the fear and the distance, and brings us to a level and a strength and a conviction and a hope that we can never imagine. One of the most difficult things to preach on is love, because we only have one word for love, and think how we use it. I love pizza. I love my iPhone 8. I didn't like the iPhone X10, so I love my iPhone 8. I love Grater's ice cream. I love when the metro train comes on time. I love a manual transmission. Oh, I love my mother. I love my father. I love my God. Are all of those equal? No. We use the word so callously that often people from other languages say, "Do you know the meaning, the impact, and the import of this word?" We're blessed because a great Christian apologist, C.S. Lewis, gave us 4 ways to approach love. A very famous book, most of you, if you haven't heard of it, many of you may have read it, called The 4 Loves. And he says there are basically 4 types of love alive in the world. The first common he calls a filial love, which is the love between brothers and sisters within a family, which is an understandable bond. He uses the word eros, from which we get the word erotic, and people are very familiar with that type of love. There's another type of love called storge, S-T-O-R-G-E, which is an empathy. When you see someone suffering, when someone is in pain, when someone is crying, you're drawn in, and that's a type of love. But he says, those are the loves we come to know through human experience. There is another love called agape. Agape is greater than all of the other loves combined, because agape is completely selfless. It consumes everything we are and everything we do. With agape, our lives are oriented by love, focused on love, and in the end, we want to achieve love. How has our Catholic tradition given us a deeper understanding of agape love? I look to St. Augustine, the great theologian, and his commentary from the second reading, where he writes in Latin, "Dilige et fac quid est," which translates quite simply, love and do what you will. He says, if you keep silent by love. If you speak, speak by love. If you correct, correct by love. If you pardon, pardoned by love. Let love be rooted in you, and from the root, nothing but good can grow. Our own church in the Second Vatican Council, the document Lumen Gentium number 42 states, the true disciple of Christ is marked by love, both of God and of neighbor. In 2011, during a general audience, Pope Benedict XVI once said, holiness is nothing other than charity, love lived to the full. And most recently, our Holy Father, Pope Francis, in his apostolic exhortation, Gaudete et Exultate, said, we are called to be holy by living our lives with love and bearing witness in everything we do, wherever we find ourselves. Let us be rooted in love. Agape, the highest form of love, which does not discount all of the human feelings of love we have, says that love permeates our soul. And so to remain in Christ and have Christ remain in us, we are, our very existence and essence is made of love. Now we know what love isn't. Love is not polarizing. But how often do we love to read something that detracts from someone we dislike? We know that love is not divisive, but how often when we see an injustice do we want to divide in a way that is righteous and victorious? We know that life is not petty, life is not vindictive, life is not spiteful, but how often do we get the greatest chuckle of the times when we can laud how good we are at being petty, vindictive, and spiteful? In calling the first disciples to agape, to remain in the love of Christ so that Christ might remain in them, Jesus foreshadows the challenges they will feel, the weakness that they will experience, and the despair that they will hang on to, and says, when you reach that point in your life where you don't know where to turn, when fear overcomes you and hopelessness seems an uncertainty, do one single act of love, selfless love, generous love, creative love, and that will move you one step closer to Christ, one step closer to hope, and all that salvation has to offer. Let us this week remain in Christ's love by doing even one selfless act of love. And find how Christ's joy will be in us, and our joy will be complete.